Can't sleep? Don't want to sleep? Afraid to sleep? Are the windows closed? Are your doors locked? Did you check your closet? And under your bed? Maybe you should keep a light on in the hallway, just in case. Now settle in. Make yourself comfortable. Lay back, close your eyes, and let me tell you a story.
Arriving January 9th and available for pre-order now, The Reality Reaction Team, a brand new mind-bending sci-fi cyberpunk thriller by author Joe Prosit. In the distant future, humanity spends its time dancing through layers of simulated universes inside of simulated universes, while the real world crumbles around them. The powers that be offer a simple solution. Take the long nap and enter a decade-long hibernation while a select few rebuild Earth into a utopia. Two young lovers, Josh, a hallucinating lowlife, and Ziggy, a university student determined to quantify objective truth, find themselves caught in a spiraling tangle of conspiracy, illusion, and worlds within worlds as they begin to decipher the sinister facade of the long nap and find important allies in a mysterious group called the Reality Reaction Team. Pre-order your ebook or paperback now at joeprosit.com.
What is it about the full moon that inspires so many different things? A romantic evening illuminated by its silvery light can be the setting for a heartwarming love story. But hospital emergency rooms claim it's a time that marks an increase in their business. The full moon can also be a harbinger of things of a more malevolent nature. Creatures you wouldn't want to come upon. By the light of the moon. I hate it when people ask me where I get my ideas. It's like there's this unwritten rule that whenever someone meets a writer, they must ask them that question. It's not that I don't have an answer. There are several. Sometimes they just pop into my head. Other times they're inspired by something I'm reading or a movie I'm watching. Once I got a really good idea from a dream. The thing that bugs me the most about that question is that it reminds me of the times when I sit in front of the screen, fingers poised over the keyboard, and my mind is a total blank. Some people call it writer's block. I call it brain void. Whenever it happens, I shut down the computer and go outside. I don't have a particular destination in mind. Sometimes I end up in the park, people watching, trying to glean secrets from the passersby. On other occasions, I end up at the movie theater and sit in the very back row, right below the projector window, hoping for inspiration from the pictures flickering on the screen or the silhouettes of the people seated in front of me. Today, I ended up in a bar. It was one I had never been to before, one of those dark neighborhood gin joints that had a cast of regulars and a periodic stranger like myself looking to hide away from the rest of the world. But I had a second purpose. Bars were full of stories. I spotted a potential gold mine the moment I walked inside. There was a grizzled man sitting at the bar, looking like he had just walked off the set of a western. He had long, greasy hair and an equally unkempt beard. Dirt sat deep in the wrinkles on his face. He wore an old, long raincoat, the kind cowboys used to keep dry while on horseback. He sat at one corner of the bar, staring at the mirror behind the rows of bottles. His gaze was unflinching. With his right hand, he nursed a beer from a tall mug. His left one hid in his lap. He had all kinds of interesting written across every inch of himself. A scar split one of his eyebrows, and there was a tattoo of a pentagram on his outside thenar space. That's the web of skin on your hand between your thumb and index finger. You learn a lot of fascinating words like that when you're a writer. I walked up to the bar and sat down near him. There was a jukebox against one wall, but it was as dark and run down as the rest of the place. The only sounds were that of a baseball game on the television, and a low, indistinct murmur from the other customers. The bartender walked over and raised an inquisitive eyebrow. "Beer, draft," I said. He walked over to the tap, filled a mug, and slid it down the bar toward me. It stopped right next to my hand. Nice. I'd have to include that detail in the story sometime. I took a sip, wiped away the foam with the back of my hand, and twisted around to face the world-weary man two stools down. "Howdy," I said.
"Howdy?"
He turned his gaze toward me for a second, then grunted before returning his stare to something or someone reflected in the mirror. I tried to triangulate his gaze and ended up looking at an anxious man sitting in a booth, nervously eyeing a clock on the wall and casting his own furtive glances back at the stranger. "Someone you know?" I asked, hoping to break the ice. People who hung out in bars always had a story to tell, and I was determined to find out what his was. The stranger grunted again. "Does he owe you money? Did he steal your girl?" I asked. He turned those steel gray eyes back on me.
"What's it to you?"
I shrugged. "Nothing. Just looking for a story," I confessed.
"A story?"
"Yeah, I'm a writer. I collect stories."
"From strangers in bars?"
"Sometimes."
"And what makes you think I have one?"
I had to keep myself from laughing. "Mister," I began, in that same hokey old West accent I had said howdy with earlier, "I'd be willing to bet $100 that you have the most interesting story in this entire bar."
"Really?"
he asked.
"What if it's a story you might not want to hear?"
"Can't imagine what that would be."
"Maybe it's one you'd find hard to believe."
"If you're trying to discourage me, you're doing the exact opposite." He took a pull from his beer.
"All right,"
he said.
"What would you say if I told you I was a werewolf hunter?"
If I had been taking a drink from my own glass, I would have spit it out in a shower of amber liquid. "A werewolf hunter?"
"Too crazy for you?"
"No, not at all," I replied, trying to take his revelation in stride. "Just don't meet too many of those in the city." He chuckled. "So, tell me, how does one become a werewolf hunter?" The stranger sighed, shot a glance at the reflection of the man in the booth as if to make sure he was still there, emptied his beer and signaled the bartender for a refill.
"It all began a little over 2 years ago. I was living on my family's ranch in western Oklahoma. My parents had recently passed, and it was me and my brother running the place with the help of a couple of hands and the occasional transient looking to make a few bucks. One night, there was a light in the sky. Lit the place up as bright as day as it streaked overhead. It completely obliterated the full moon for a few seconds."
"A meteor?" I asked.
The stranger shrugged. "My brother Jake thought so. He and I had been getting ready to go chase down some coyotes that had been harassing our herd. Whatever it was, it had crashed into the woods that bordered our property. Jake wanted to check it out. He had it in his head that it could be valuable and maybe we could sell it. So he rode off toward where it had landed. I followed at a slower pace, keeping an eye out for the coyotes."
A topped-off beer mug slid into place in front of him and he took a drink from it, allowing the foam to soak into his mustache and beard.
"After a while, I lost sight of Jake, so I headed for the crash site, expecting I would find him there. As the trees got thicker, I lost his trail. Then I heard a scream."
"Jake?" I asked. The stranger nodded.
I rode toward him as quickly as I could in the dark. When I got there, a pair of coyotes were tugging at his clothes, trying to drag him away. I took a shot at them with my rifle, and they ran off. Was he okay? Hardly. His throat was torn out, and he lay in a puddle of his own blood.
Jesus, I didn't know coyotes could do that.
They can't, and they certainly wouldn't have been able to get the jump on Jake. No, the beast that did that to him was at least as big as a man, and we didn't have any bears or mountain lions in the area. I saddled his horse and tied my brother across the saddle. I heard something stir in the woods behind me. I took out my knife, spun around, and threw it at something lurking in the dark. It must have hit it because it growled and loped off into the night. When I went over to where it had been hiding, I saw tracks in the dirt. Wolf tracks. A wolf? I asked. A big one. I sent Jake's horse back home and tracked them through the night. When the sun came up, I lost the trail in a stream. I rode up and down the length of it, trying to find out where the beast had gone. I didn't find any more wolf tracks, but I did spot some human footprints a ways downstream.
Another rancher? I inquired.
At the time, I thought it was someone from one of the local Indian tribes, out on a spirit quest or something. All I knew was that it wasn't a wolf.
So you immediately thought werewolf? I asked.
The stranger shook his head. All I could think about was making sure Jake was taken care of. I rode back to the house. The ranch hands had found Jake's body on his horse and already called the sheriff. He arrived shortly after I did. I told him what had happened and about my suspicions that there was a wolf in the area. The sheriff was skeptical. He'd seen plenty of coyotes, but had never heard tell of a wolf in those parts. He questioned my hands and took my clothing covered in Jake's blood as evidence. 2 days later, he arrested me for the murder of my brother.
You're kidding. Didn't you show him the tracks?
There was a big rainstorm in the intervening days. The sheriff came up with some cockamamie story of how I slit Jake's throat and then waited for some coyotes to come along and eat away the evidence of a knife wound. He used the fact that I had lost my knife against me. He got it in his head that I didn't want to share my inheritance with Jake.
Obviously, they let you go, I observed.
The stranger shook his head. Before they could arraign me, I managed to escape. They all knew me down at the sheriff's office and trusted me a little too much. I managed to convince the night guard that I was having a heart attack, and when he came to help me, I overpowered him and stole a police car. Been on the run ever since.
You're a fugitive? He nodded. This story was getting better with each passing minute. How did the whole werewolf hunting thing start? I asked, hoping to move it along.
Well, once I got away, I snuck back into the woods where Jake was killed, hoping to find evidence to clear me. And that's when I stumbled across the crash site.
The meteor, I recalled. He ignored me.
That's where I found more tracks, wolf and human, in a spot where the weather couldn't erase them.
No werewolves?
They were long gone. But the conclusion was obvious. I wasn't up against a mere animal. It was a preternatural creature with human intelligence. I laid low. It wasn't hard to avoid the law. I let my hair and beard grow and blended in. Then I started noticing stories appearing in the local newspapers. People killed in wolf attacks where there were no wolves. Just like Jake. I thought the authorities might reach the same conclusion I had, but instead, they blamed the killings on me. I guess they didn't notice that all the murders took place under a full moon.
Ah, and that's how you knew it was werewolves.
I think he detected the sarcasm in my voice because he returned his attention to the man in the booth.
This is just me spitballing, I said, attempting to steer the conversation in a different direction. But let me throw this out there, assuming everything you've told me so far is true.
It is, he replied without looking my way.
Your brother and several other people in towns you happen to visit are killed by what people initially assume is a wolf, but later believe is you making it look like a wolf. He continued staring into the mirror. Do you ever wonder if maybe they're right? His gaze abruptly shifted back to me, his eyes burning. I'm not saying you did it intentionally. People have dissociative episodes. You may not have been aware of it, and your fractured mind dreamed up this notion of werewolves to bridge the gap between reality and what you believe.
I did not kill my brother, or anyone else, he declared.
His gaze returned to the mirror.
At least, anyone human.
I turned so that I could see the nervous man in the booth. That man you keep staring at, who is he? The stranger took a long pull from his beer.
As far as I can tell, there were 5 of the creatures. I've killed 4 of them. The last one is sitting in that booth.
The timorous man didn't seem the type to turn into a vicious killing machine. But who was I to judge? Have the authorities connected you to those murders as well?
It's not murder if it's not a human being, he replied.
Looks human to me. The stranger remained silent. I studied the man in the booth some more. He kept on checking the time and looking out the window. Then a thought occurred to me. Maybe it wasn't the stranger at the bar making him nervous, but rather he was preoccupied by waiting for something or someone. Are you sure he's not an FBI agent expecting backup to take you down? The stranger's reply was instant and ominous.
That's not what he's waiting for.
What then?
Well, for one thing, for me to make a mistake so he can escape.
Escape? All he needs to do is get up and walk out. The stranger pulled back the edge of his raincoat, revealing a shotgun laying across his lap, the index finger of his left hand wrapped around the trigger. Geez, is that thing loaded? I asked in a whisper. The stranger gave me a look that instantly conveyed the stupidity of my question.
In a few minutes, the full moon will rise, and his true nature will be revealed. After all these years, the world will know that I am right.
I see. And how do you know for sure he's a werewolf?
The stranger returned his gaze to me. That's not the question you should be asking, he replied.
It's not?
I'm surprised. I thought you were a writer.
I am, I said defensively. What question do you think I should ask? Seems to me that asking how you know he's a werewolf is a logical conclusion to your story. The stranger smiled.
A conclusion, but not the beginning.
I don't follow, I told him, thinking back through his tale to where it all started. Then it hit me. The meteor.
You're getting warmer.
It created the werewolves? I asked. He shook his head, disappointed.
How? By landing on some innocent campers?
Well, if it was a piece of moon rock,
stop. You're embarrassing yourself.
I peered into his eyes. Not a meteor.
You're getting hot.
A UFO. A crashed spaceship.
Boiling.
When you went back into the woods, you came upon the crash site. And it wasn't just the foot and paw prints you found.
Now you're cooking.
Surely if you showed that to the authorities...
It's long gone. Some government agency swept in, hauled it away, and blew a big hole in the dirt to make it look like a crater.
That sounded awfully convenient. So you have no proof?
Not yet, he said,
returning his gaze to the man in the booth.
It's taken me months to track this last one. He thought he could lose me in the city, but he just ended up corralling himself into a corner.
It's not that I don't want to believe you. This is an incredible story, but it is all just too far-fetched. I might be able to sell it to one of the science fiction or fantasy magazines, but if you shoot him, there's no jury in the world that's going to buy it.
They will, he said confidently.
Listen, put that gun away, finish your beer, and let's watch the ball game.
You can stare at the TV, but if you do, you'll miss the real show.
As if on cue, I heard a woman scream. I leaped to my feet and scanned the bar. There was a woman lying on the floor being tended to by her friends. One of them was pointing at the man in the booth. A low murmur was rising to a confused collection of questions, shock and surprise from the people in the bar. Something had happened to him. His face, his body, even his clothing appeared somehow translucent, causing his features to blend with a whole other physiognomy beneath, that of a wolf.
Get out of the way, the stranger growled as he shoved me aside and raised the shotgun.
He racked the weapon. The bar became silent, and the other patrons froze when they heard the distinctive sound.
Everyone, take out your phones and start filming. You're not going to want to miss this, the stranger commanded.
He stood up straight and walked toward the front of the bar, where the man in the booth slid out and stood as well. He looked outside through the tinted windows facing the street. The full moon crested over the horizon. The higher it rose, the more the stranger's werewolf changed. Its body was now hunched over, and claws were visible beneath the fading opaqueness of its fingers. What is going on? I asked.
It's not a werewolf like in the old movies, the stranger explained. The wolf is the alien's true form. They use some sort of camouflage technology to disguise themselves as humans. But the spectrum of light reflected from a full moon interferes with it, and their true identity is revealed.
A thick layer of fur dominated the illusion of his skin and clothing. The creature didn't exactly look like an earth wolf. It was more of a hybrid type creature. Humanoid, with the jaws and sharp teeth of a wolf, but smaller ears and bright yellow eyes. Its front paws had fingers, and somehow a large, well-muscled frame had been obscured by its disguise. Fear overtook reason, and I shouted, "What are you waiting for? Shoot it!" No longer did I desire to save the person I'd assumed was the next victim of a madman. I wanted the creature dead.
Its camouflage is also its armor, the stranger explained. Some sort of force field. I have to wait for it to be fully deactivated by the light of the moon.
We watched as the transformation seemed stalled, and it looked as if a wolf and a man occupied the same space.
Something's wrong,
the stranger said, holding his gun on the werewolf while glancing at the full moon, now completely visible above the buildings across the street. The creature realized it was not yet fully defenseless, and took one step, then another, toward the stranger and me. The front door flew open.
Freeze! Drop the gun! A voice ordered.
There were two policemen, their guns drawn and aimed at the stranger. I raised my hands and slowly stepped away to avoid being caught in the crossfire.
I can't,
the stranger told them.
Drop it or I'll shoot.
Look, damn it, he said, directing their attention to the werewolf.
For a second, as the unfiltered moonlight shone upon it from the open door, the human disguise blinked out entirely. The policeman's jaws swung open as they saw what was happening.
What the hell is that? One asked,
swinging his gun to point at the monster in the middle of the bar. The door shut, and the translucent human shell reappeared. The police started firing,
but the bullets just smashed into the weakened but still effective force field and fell to the ground. I looked back out at the moon. Its full brightness diminished slightly, and understood what was happening. "The windows!" I shouted. "The windows are tinted!" The stranger looked at the large panes of glass shielding the werewolf from the full spectrum of the moon. He pointed his shotgun at them and fired. The glass shattered but remained in place. He racked another shell into the barrel, ejecting the spent one, and fired again. The glass fell away like a shower of diamonds. A bone-chilling howl erupted from the werewolf as the remnants of its camouflage and shield disappeared. The police officers fired again, but even though their bullets struck the creature, it appeared to shake them off. Another shell was racked into the chamber of the stranger's weapon, and he aimed at the monster's chest.
"This is for Jake," he said.
The space wolf was blown off its feet, flying backwards into the booth, the blast tearing its chest to bloody shreds. The stranger loaded another round and advanced on the dying creature. Its yellow eyes stared at him angrily. We all looked at him, myself, the police, and the other bar patrons.
"Silver shot," he explained.
He ejected the remaining shells from the gun and offered it butt first to the police.
"My name is Roger Laramie. I believe you're looking for me."
One of the policemen took the gun, and the stranger turned around and held his hands behind his back. The other officer approached and cuffed him.
"Dispatch," the first officer said into his radio, "we need an ambulance and maybe animal control down here at Otto's."
"That's it? You're giving yourself up?" He looked at me.
"That's the last of them. My career as a werewolf hunter is over."
"But they'll put you on trial for murder." The stranger smiled.
"Let them."
He looked around at the men and women who, moments earlier, were enjoying their drinks in relative peace. Every one of them had their phones out, recording.
"I think a jury just might believe my story."
I nodded in agreement, realizing that the tale I was hoping to take and tell myself was probably going viral even now. Amidst the confusion, I slipped out of the bar and started walking toward the train station. There were always lots of good stories in a train station. Thank you for listening to By the Light of the Moon, written especially for the Bedtime Stories for Insomniacs fiction podcast by Rich Hosek. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform. But most importantly, please share these stories with anyone you know who enjoys audiobooks. If you sign up for the Insomniacs newsletter at bedtimestories.studio, you will receive a free audio or ebook edition of The Charlatan's Conundrum and other Bedtime Stories for Insomniacs. You can find out more about the host of Bedtime Stories for Insomniacs at richhosek.com. Thanks again, and all the very best.
The Luke in Time Mysteries begins with two private detectives. Luke, who's got a little bit of a drinking problem, and her partner Lyle, who's got a little bit of an eating problem. Together, they've got pretty big money problem. So when Marva walks into their office, offering gobs of cash, if they can find someone who's trying to kill her, they take the job without asking any question, which becomes their biggest problem, because soon enough, they walk into a trap and wind up dead. But that's not where this story ends. In fact, it's just the setup, because they go back to the moment where they first met Marva, and until Luke and Lyle can solve Marva's mystery, they keep dying over and over again. If this book sounds like something you'd enjoy, check the links in the show notes to learn more.
You can find out more about the nine lives of Marva DeLonghi and the Luke and Time Mysteries at jodyjsperling.com.